So I want to start with asking a general question, which I think would be useful for this workshop. Why? So general question is why string theories? Would be interested in integrability.
And so according to yesterday, you don't know the answer.
Oh. I don't know the full answer. I know some, but not the full answer. So obviously, some answer is that well, basically, the same reason as condensed matter people are interested in integrability. Namely, if you have some example, well, general condensed matter system is not integrable. But sometimes you come by some example of a system which is integrable. And then you can calculate everything till the, everything explicitly, or many things explicitly, and it gives you an example where you have full control over the spectrum of Hamiltonian. This is a nice, exactly solvable example. And obviously, we have now lots of evidence that AdS5 process 5, string in AdS5 process 5, is integrable on the quantum level. And this is very nice because it would allow us to calculate important things till the end. But the question is there any deeper reason to be interested in integrability? Note that string theory is in some sense a universal quantum theory, I think. So every consistent quantum theory could probably be embedded into it in some way. By some, it's called engineering sometimes. In our field, you create some complicated brain configuration, for example, and you can realize everything. If the theory is consistent, that can be realized on some configuration of brain. So in this background, which is one of the most symmetric backgrounds in GitV, realized and engineered some integrable system, which is probably not the simplest integrable system you can. There are simpler examples of quantum integrable systems than this thing. So,
when you say quantum, you mean an alpha prime, but at three levels?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Planar. So, one of the questions which I want to ask, and it would be useful to keep in mind, I think, during this program, is just to make a list of things about this particular integrable system which make it different from other known examples. It doesn't have to be drastically different, but just a list of things which make this not just example of quantum integrable system engineered in string theory, but there should be something special about, well, the way this thing is studied currently is not using a string Wolfshift theory, but from applying general techniques of beta ansatz, Youngian symmetries, finite gap integration, whatever, basically all the general techniques, which already been known before. But because it is special integrable system, because it comes from string theory, there must be something special about the way this methods works, the traditional methods work. So it would be interesting to kind of create a list of things which are different here, which are slightly, maybe slightly unusual, and make it a special integrable system. And then if we create this list, then by looking at the list, we might have some ideas about what is special from string theory point of view. Because this thing should come, this integrable system should come from string Wolfshift theory, which is a very unusual type of quantum field theory. In the previous examples, of we either studied integrable lattice models, or we studied massive relativistic integrable systems such as Sine-Gordon, where there is a mass gap and massive particles scatter, and there you can calculate S-matrix. The Wolfshift string theory is very different. It's kind of a conformal field theory, or maybe a topological field theory with BRST iterator. And the B goes something like this. So it's, one should ask what integrability mean in principle for such a system. Note that, strictly speaking, you cannot even... even the action is not well defined, because you can take an action. If you treat it just as conformal field theory, in conformal field theory it has an action, but in string theory context you can add to action something, Q bar of something, and get a different action. So is it true that there exists a special choice of action which is integrable as conformal field theory? Or does integrability appear only when you pass to cohomology of your separator, that is to physical states?
Like I mentioned yesterday, some experts claim that CFT itself is intrinsically integrable.
Which CFT?
Any.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's the key. Well,
is it in higher than two dimensions?
Not two dimensional CFT, but you mean the two dimensional version CFT here,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Because of the.
There's this very tough papers by Baganov, Lukyanov, and Zamolodchikov, who claim that somehow the algebra of stress energy tensor, somehow itself you can construct. There's a young Baxter symmetry behind even Virasoro and so on and so forth.
But from the string point of view, those constructions are maybe not very natural, because their algebra is not reparametrization invariant. The quantities which those integrals of motion, they do not. I think they are not invariant under reparametrizations, if I remember correctly. Well, they're not even invariant under general conformal transformations, if I remember correctly, because their integrals of motion are, the first integral of motion is energy, and then you have higher modes of...
A stress energy tensor, I think, is the first integral somehow.
Yes, a stress energy tensor is the first integral.
Weird non-linear things which are...
Well, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe indeed conformal field theories, there is something exact about conformal field theories already, in that beta function vanishes exactly to all others in perturbation theory at least. This is some.
Is it known whether this Bajanov stuff generalizes beyond minimal models? Because I remember that the papers were actually very restricted to C less than 1. So is this a general story, or is this just a very specific thing?
I don't know.
This is probably very specific.
Very specific, one of the, right? That's what I mean.
There are various meanings of integrability. And for theories with many mass cap. It's a little hard to discuss the S-matrix notion of integrability.
I would think that we should study
found Jan Baxter in, they constructed some complicated things beyond the stress energy tensor and show that somehow there's a Jan Baxter symmetry behind the structure. But I think you're right, and the thing they actually worked out was just a minimal thing.
Usually, with the minimal models, it's usually an integral of perturbation. So you could take that perturbation, you could say it's integral all along that perturbation, and sort of that's the end of that. Makes sense.
Minimal models are perturbed.
Right, but they're perturbed minimal models, which are
integral deformation.
With a very specific, but you could just follow that all the way back to deformation equals zero and see what happens to the conserved quantities, right? Or do they all go away in that one?
Well, in any case, I want to stress that it's not just CFT, but CFT is additional structure, as we will see, this additional structure might have something to do with integrability, actually. Although, of course, the way people study integrability at this point in the system is passing to, fixing a gauge and passing to the light cone gauge, which breaks global symmetries. It's kind of non-covariant approach. And also it breaks all this CFT, QBRST. So everything is broken. And then you get some generic two-dimensional continuous medium type of system. And it turns out that the remaining global symmetries, this famous TS2/2 is in some sense enough to determine. If you assume integrability, which is, it's enough to determine S matrix.
Oh, that's not true. You need to centrally extend it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. PS, let's say, everything is centrally extended.
PSU plus PSU plus U1 plus U1 plus U1.
Yes. So there are two more, one more U1 off.
No, it's PSU.
PS plus two more U1s.
Plus three U1s.
Then I need
three U1s and two P's.
My this one must be true.
No, also PSU. The second one is also PSU. PSU plus PSU plus U1 plus U1 plus U1.
That was an infinite series yesterday, wasn't it? That was an infinite series yesterday. Just three?
Yeah.
No, but now he's talking about the symmetry is slightly off-shell symmetry of this S matrix. I didn't get to that part yesterday, really. But
So this three times extended algebra indeed. But by the time you fix the gauge and then you go to the light cone gauge and then the resulting theory is invariant under this very interesting symmetry, which allows to fix the spectrum of elementary excitations and also S matrix, two particle S matrix, and also if you assume integrability then n particle S matrix. So nobody knows, I think, how to prove integrability in this context. Except for, you can do the following thing. You can say that in the pure spinor formalism, which I will discuss, we have many conserved charges which can be proven to exist at the quantum level. And then presumably there are local conserved charges, which kind of means that the excitations, if you scatter several excitations, then the set of quasi-momenta remains fixed. There are only permutations. I'm not sure if it implies factorizability of S matrix, but at least it shows that the set of momenta is conserved. But you cannot prove in the light cone formalism that these charges exist at the quantum level, because you don't have tool for it. You can verify order by order in perturbation theory, maybe to first order and to second order. But only pure spinor formalism, which is covariant under the big, so there is a big group, PSU 2, 2, 4. So the pure spinor formalism preserves the big group. And in the pure spinor formalism, because you have this additional structure, you can prove actually in perturbation to arbitrary order perturbation theory that the charges are well defined. And so this is the closest to the proof of integrability, I think, that we have now. I'm not sure what is the situation with local conserved charges. Construction gives only.
But that's maybe also the already the trouble for this approach, because we have all the indications that somehow you have to sort of locally do something a little bit violent to this PSU thing, somehow break it a little bit, and then only somehow at the very end recover it. So if you consist on always in every step being completely covariant, maybe that's not powerful enough.
For what?
For finding the system, because the system somehow needs to be locally off, off shell in the sense of being off PSU 224.
I think you go off Q. That's the point. In light cone gauge, you create the algebra, but you do it covariantly, you're really going off shell covariantly. That's the usual thing about light cone versus covariant.
Well, maybe your constraint somehow can do that. Oh, that's your trick. You mean you keep always a PSU, but you have these Qs, and only when the Qs are all, zero on physical things.
Then the Q acts linearly. Right. Somehow you have to include nonlinear terms in the Q. It's the usual thing. In light cone gauge, the algebra becomes nonlinear, but if you just think covariantly, it's the gauge transformation that becomes nonlinear.
So let me discuss now how in CFT, natural thing would be to study implication of integrability on operator product extension, but I don't know how to do it. Also, we will see that there is a Wilson line type of object. If we take a string wall shape and we draw a contour, then there is a function of the contour, which is like the exponential of integral of some flat connection, depending on the spectral parameter, which is defined in a way consistent with the string theory structure. So this has a nice definition of the pure Skinner formalism. And so the natural intention is to study the OPEs of such objects. For example, consider intersection and various commutation relations of these operators. So this is another possibility that maybe we would be able to see at least some manifestation of integrability in terms of these operators, which are natural from string theory point of view. So first of all, I want to say that. So I will now describe the pure Skinner superstring in ADS5 cross S5, and as we all know, it is based on this super cassette space. Matthias talked yesterday. I don't have to introduce this objects, but I want to reiterate that this algebra G equals PSU 2 to 4, it has a Z4 gradient.
You need to put a tilde on the PSU because you have to go to the universal cover of PSU. Non-quantized H's, yeah.
There might be, by the way, I'm not sure if it's really universal. I think you can divide by something. It's not the largest coverage dimension. I think, if I remember correctly, there was some Z2 by which you still divide. I'm not ready now to discuss. Anyway, because if the time is periodic, then you would be left only with supergravity states. Only with masses per gravity state. So this algebra will be denoted by the Gauchic letter G. It has a Z4 gradient. So GI commutator with GJ should be into J I plus J. Somehow, this is essentially this C4 gradient corresponds to outer automorphisms of this algebra as well. So there is this C4 gradient, and the
But they're not all outer automorphisms, right?
Yeah, it's only the two outer automorphisms. But I will not use the fact that part of this is linear, so I just say the four. Use the four grading, that's what I need. That's the structure which I need. This is subalgebra which preserves a point in idea. So geometrically, the way of thinking about this gradient is you realize PSU as the symmetry algebra of ADS, of ADS 5 process 5. Then, so you get your ADS 5 process 5, you fix a point. Oops. You fix a point, which means a point in ADS and point in sphere. And so you have a tangent space to the point. It's very inconvenient to draw this picture because you need to draw two pictures, the sphere and ADS. So if you think of PSU as the algebra of killing vectors and the super vectors in the space, then G0 is a subalgebra, a bosonic subalgebra which preserves the point. It is SO14 process of 5. So this is a denominator group. And G2 in the vicinity of this chosen point, G2 would correspond to translation. So there are 10 of them. This is a 10-dimensional algebra. It's not subalgebra because G2 will give you G0. So because of the effects of the curvature, the commutation of two translations will give you rotation. And G1, G3 are supersymmetries. In the flat space limit, one of them will come from the left sector of the string and the other will come from the right sector. So this indicates that G3 would give you the commutator of two elements from G3 gives you some translation because the commutator of two elements of G1 gives you the translation. So if you want to write some Lagrangian, we usually introduce the group element G in this PSU 2-4. And so the construction of the cassette space means that we identify G with H times G, where H belongs to SO14 cross SO5. Denominator group. So then we construct currents J on the whole chip, which are minus DG, G minus 1. And these currents transform nicely under this. So this is called gauge transformation. We'll call gauge transformation. So the currents transform nicely under gauge transformation. So we can split again the current into J0 plus J1 plus J2 plus J3. And J1, J2, J3 would transform homogeneously under this. And J0 would transform as a gauge field. So we can introduce the covariant derivative. D plus J0. Call it D0. D0 equals D plus J0. It's covariant derivative. J0 transforms as a gauge field. Again, you can introduce parameterize this G as Well, geometrically, the choice of tetrad in the tangent space to that cassette space is equivalent to the choice of lift of the group element from the cassette space to the numerator group. So the cassette space, at least in the vicinity of the chosen point, can be parameterized as x by x's and tetras. There are 10 x's parameterizing the tangent direction, and 32 tetras parameterizing odd directions. Then we write g equals this expression. So we could have chosen it differently. For example, we could have chosen like 1 over r theta left e to the power 1 over r x e to the power 1 over right theta right. So, sorry, r here is the radius of ideal space. I just put it this way to stress the fact that this, we are writing the group element is natural on the near flat space expansion. So if we choose g in the other way, it would correspond to different choice of gauge. So this g is related to this g by rotation by some element h in the denominator group. So they're related by the gauge transformation, complicated gauge transformation. So when we write the action, we just calculate j on this. So the action is some functional of theta and x. And so to write this functional, plus there is a ghost part, which I will describe in a moment. But the matter part is some functional of theta and x. And to evaluate this matter part, you calculate j and write the action as action will be integral of super trace 1 half j to plus j to minus plus 3 quarter j1 plus Luca explained where these coefficients come from during his talk. Basically, it's fixed by the Bierstein invariants. Plus, this is S matter. So S matter, if you express it in terms of, well, it's nice to put R square here, the radius of ideal space. So then if you substitute expression for J in terms of theta and X, then you would get integral of dx square plus d theta square plus corrections like 1 over r, theta, d dx, for example, and stuff like this. So there will be infinite series of corrections in 1 over r, like we have usual in sigma model, but it's...
Do the 3 quarters and 1 quarter mean that it's not world sheet parity invariant?
Yeah, there is some symmetry here, which is, I think, a combination of world sheet parity with some automorphism, some complex
Okay, so it is really good.
Some kind of Kaplan involution, I think. Which so this if you flip 1 and 3 and flip plus and minus, so there must be some automorphism.
But somehow you have also imposed Kappa symmetry now already, right?
There is no Kappa symmetry in this formalism. Instead of Kappa symmetry, we have ghosts.
Regarding that, there is the construction of the hybrid in ADS2 and forces 2, and then, for example, you see that at least at the one loop level, when you want it to be one loop conformally invariant, you have two solutions for some parameter, which will give you either this or the opposite. So they are symmetric in this.
But I'm sure it would be the same in ADS5. So we need to understand the ghost sector. The ghost fields are pure spinners and they have conjugate momenta. this formalism, it's convenient to think of pure spinners. Well, there are two semi which in first place you have lambda and lambda twiddle. In the usually, for example, in Nathan's lectures last month, he concentrated only on the left sector, so there was one pure spinner lambda, and the action was something like integral w plus d minus lambda. Conjugate momentum. But here, because we are on curved space-time, there is no split into left and right sector. It's very interesting. We don't have separate left and right sector, so we don't have a chance to discuss separately left sector. So we will have two pure spinners, lambda and lambda twiddle. And I would also, so this is kind of, in first I think this would go into left and this would go into right sector. And it is convenient to think of this lambda as an element of G3. And the right lambda as an element of G1. So they are identified with elements of odd subalgebras. And so I will also put index to stress that lambda belongs to G3 and this lambda 3 belongs to G1. So I will put index lambda 3 and lambda 1. So this would be in flat space, something like this. And in ADS, I will write a kinetic term as integral of supertrace W1 plus d minus lambda 3 plus supertrace W1 minus d plus lambda 3 del 1, W3 minus d plus lambda 1. So in the flat space limit, when we go to the vicinity of this point and write in the limit when r goes to infinity, then what I want to put is, I put r square in front of the action again. So I put r square in front of everything, both matter and ghost. And then if I go to flat space limit, I need to rescale my w's. So I will get a quadratic piece which would go something like w, the product of gamma matrices in the direction of the sphere. So something like gamma 1, gamma 2, etc., gamma 5, times d minus lambda. So this, I think, slightly differs with the usual flat space in the redefinition of the momentum, because the way defined in the flat space limit, W and lambda would have the same chirality, while in the usual definition of pure spinners, they have opposite chirality. So they have one chirality, so you need odd number of gamma matrices to pair them. So it would go into something like this. Then I will need, yeah, so my pure spinners, lambda 3 and lambda 1, would transform non-trivially under the gauge transformation. Under the gauge transformation, lambda 3 and lambda 1 would go, lambda 3 would go into h lambda 3 h minus 1, and the same about lambda 1. Go into h lambda 1 h minus 1. I want the product lambda g, for the reason which I will explain. I want this product to transform kind of homogeneous. So this h minus 1 would cancel with this h. So I want to be able to act by pure spinner on the left. It's a physical element. So this means that pure spinners are local objects. They live in the tangent space to ADS. In a flat space, when we studied string, pure spinners string in flat space, it was easy to make a mistake, as I say, that pure spinners are just global additional global variables, but in fact they are not global variables, they are the objects of the tangent space. So to define them you need to introduce the prod. If I change this definition of G into a different definition, for example, put this theta on the right, or put something like e to the power theta left plus theta right plus 6, then I would need to redefine also pure spinner. The definition depends on the choice of the prod. Yes, so here in this space, theta left is also an element of G3, theta right element of G1, and x element of G2. Because lambdas transform non-trivially under gauge transformation, I need to covariantize here, put a covariant derivative instead of this d plus and d minus. The way it is usually written, we say that the covariantization equivalent to introducing terms where n plus and n minus are the Lorentz currents. So n plus equals anti-commutator W1 plus with lambda C, and n minus, I think it's a minus sign, equals minus W3 minus lambda 1. So this is anti-commutator of elements. And I forgot to say most important thing, namely that the pure spinner constraint becomes very beautiful in this language. It is just a statement that anti-commutator of lambda 3 vanishes, as well as anti-commutator of lambda 1. These are pure spinner constraints, and in the flat space limit they would become lambda 3 alpha gamma alpha beta m lambda 3 beta equals 0. So, because it's just anti-commutator of two supertranslations. Simply anti-commutator by gamma matrix goes into flat space limit. It's a beautiful rewriting of... It also... the Jacobi identity for PSU implies a triple... implies that relation on two gamma matrices, I think. If I remember correctly, the relations are something like this. Something like this, in this language, corresponds to Jacobi identity for PSU algebra. So some properties of gamma matrices can be understood by looking at them at structure constants of PSU Lie algebra, PSU 2 to 4. Because I impose these constraints, and I impose this also, gauge transformations, it's natural to consider the odd vector field, Q left and Q right. Q left acts on G by multiplying it with lambda. And Q right acts on G by multiplying with lambda tridel. So it's multiplied by lambda 1, lambda tridel. It's infinitesimal shift of G. Infinitesimal shift of G on the left by lambda 3 and lambda 1. Infinitesimal action. So these both operators are nilpotent. A square equals to R square equals 0. Because of this, and the anti-commutator QL and QR acting on G is just lambda 3, lambda 1, multiplying G, and this thing belongs to the denominator group. So it's a gauge transformation. So the anti-commutator is a gauge transformation, which means that you can define a it's kind of B complex here. So we can define the total with the C operator and the square will be a gauge transformation. So physically, this is important. Important up to gauge transformation. Also, so the action, this is the best way of writing action. I put S matter here. So S equals S matter plus S ghost. And usually they are written close to each other, but I write S matter on the right part of the blackboard. And the ghost here just to simplify. So you need also to put super trace N plus N minus. And all the coefficients are adjusted so that this whole action is invariant under this symmetry. So the symmetry of the action. So after you, if you want to put R to infinity, then you rescale the ghost and this thing becomes interaction terms. And the quadratic action is the same as in flat space, modulo that subtlety is redefinition of W. So one important immediate example of using these formulas is if we look at this form, at this expression, lambda equals g minus 1, lambda 3 minus lambda 1, g it's actually for a technical reason, it's better to introduce anti-commuting parameter epsilon and write things like this. Because otherwise you get confused. So the super algebra has even part and odd part. And odd g1 plus just 3 is odd. So the formulas look nice when odd matrices contains Grassmann entries. So in the block notations, if here are g0 and g2, and here are g1 and g3, then I want to put here something bosonic and here something fermionic. And then when I consider commutator of matrices, I just consider the usual commutator of A and B. Algebra will be closed under the usual commutator if I put odd quantities here and even here. So lambdas are in the odd part of the algebra, but they are bosons. So I in writing my formulas, I introduce formal anti-commutative parameter epsilon. This is the usual trick in supergeometry, that's how it works. Introduce anti-commuting parameter epsilon and write formulas like this. Okay, so I introduce this lambda, and one can see that Q epsilon lambda is what? G minus 1 epsilon prime lambda 3 plus epsilon prime lambda 1 commutator with epsilon lambda 3 minus epsilon lambda 1. And it vanishes because of minus sign here. It vanishes because of this and because I choose a minus sign here. It's plus so 0. So this operator, lambda, is gauge invariant, obviously, because g gets multiplied by h on the left. This transforms nicely. So this is gauge invariant. And it transforms in the adjoint representation of the global symmetry. So you see transforms in the adjoint. If you take the Walsh derivative of lambda, then this is Q something. This by itself is Q cohomology. It's not Q of anything. So Q vanishes on it, but it's not Q of anything. But its derivative is Q. It is Q of the global conserved current. Global conserved current. So again, global conserved current is not invariant under BRST transformation, but it's invariant under BRST transformation up to total derivative. And these games were, of course, very important also in that maybe it's in some sense similar to what Arutyunov, the McLaren, the Remba did in the Lightcon formalism, where the central extensions appeared because operators have certain tails. I'm not sure. Well, this operator becomes well-defined physically only after you integrate. Otherwise, it's not Q-closed. So using the relation like this one can define those multilocal conserved charges. Let me pass actually to the conserved charges. So I have a relation of the type, a relation between integrated vertex operators and unintegrated vertex operators. It shows that currents correspond to BRST currents, global conserved currents, correspond to global symmetries, correspond to BRST transformation, to cohomology classes of Gauss number one. Cohomology classes of Gauss number zero do not exist, as far as I understand. Cohomology classes of Gauss number one, global symmetries. Cohomology of Gauss number two, unintegrated vertex operators. Okay, so we have QG equals lambda G. Let's put lambda. Lambda 3 plus lambda 1 g. It's a total q. It is possible to deform this with spectral parameter. So one introduces instead of g what is called t of z. So that q t of z equals lambda 3 over z plus z lambda 1. Of z. So it's a complex number. It's called spectral parameter. The way it is done, G can be expressed from its definition just as a group element. It can be also expressed for the currents. So it's just the exponential of minus integral J from some point at infinity to the point tau sigma. So G is kind of filled on the Walsh. Draw a contour at infinity and J equals minus TGG minus 1. Equals minus TGG minus 1. So this is a tautological form, it's just definition of the exponential. To construct T of Z, one similarly calculates the exponential of integral J of Z. Where G of Z is built in the following way. We split J into various components. So what components? J is J plus D tau plus plus j minus d tau minus, and I split j plus into j naught plus plus j1 plus plus j2 plus plus j3 plus, and I multiply this by 1 over z, this by 1 over z square, this by 1 over z cube. And in j minus, I multiply, in the j naught minus, I multiply j1 minus by z,
and so on.
And to make this, it turns out that this is a flat connection again. Dj plus j square equals 0, j of z. Except for one subtlety that I have to add also 1 over z to the fourth minus 1 times n plus here, and z to the fourth minus n minus 1 and minus. Where n plus and n minus are those Lorentz, are those things composed of pure spinors. So because we have 1 over z to the fourth minus 1, it would, this term would vanish for z equals 1. So for z equals 1, this transfer matrix kind of becomes the group element. This is a deformation of the group element. I can similarly define transfer matrix between two points on the worldship. So I take two points on the string worldship A and B, connect them by arbitrary contour, and evaluate P exponential of minus j over this point, j of z. So this would be T of z from point B to point A. Under gauge transformation, this would transform into H of A, C of C, H of B minus 1. It's not gauge invariant, but it transforms nicely and homogeneously under gauge transformation. So G goes to G HG, where H depends on tau plus and tau minus. And simultaneously, the transfer matrix transforms like this. So one can prove classically that equations of motion in the sigma model imply that the thing is independent of the choice of the contour. It is also important that this definition, for p exponential, you can evaluate this in arbitrary representation of PSU. Related in arbitrary representation of PSU. And so it, the thing depends on representation. Let us put index rho, because I evaluate the thing in some representation. Then I should take h here also in this presentation. That works to know that. The thing depends on representation on z, and there is no way other than changing z and changing representation to deform this object. So this object, if you insist on independence of the shape of the contour, then this object is undeformable. The only deformation is in changing z and changing representation. So if we pass to quantum theory now, then it is possible to prove that the thing is well defined also at the quantum level. First of all, the first step of the proof . So we just take this contour, and we can, for example, express J in terms of theta and x. So we write J equals dx plus J2, for example, dx plus prime partitions. And then we study various Feynman diagrams where we have some some fields like x and theta, maybe two spins also interacting some bizarre way, correct this function, there will be all kinds of divergences. But it is possible to order by order in perturbation theory modify the definition of this object so that it, first of all, is still closed under Q. So Q of T would still be equal to, well, in the classical case, Q of T from B to A was equal to lambda of A, where lambda is total, well, it was lambda 3 over z plus lambda 1 z evaluated at the point A times TAB minus TAB times lambda 3 over z plus lambda 1 z evaluated at the point B. So in particular, if we consider infinite contours, then it would be Peter's invariant. So it is possible to modify the definition of the Lux connection. This is called Lux pair, this pair of charges J plus of Z and J minus of Z. It's possible to modify it by quantum correction so that the thing is still Peter's invariant on the quantum level. The way it is proven, you take, for example, the classical definition of U. You take the classical definition which I wrote of this P exponential. Well, you have to be careful. You have to regularize it, and because there are divergences from collisions when you expand the exponential, but it's possible to regularize it. And then when you act on it by Q, then classically you would get zero on the infinite contour, but quantum mechanically you get some correction which can be expressed, potentially you can get correction which is U of the exponential minus integral J would be equal to phi integral of some correction K times exponential of minus integral J. This formula means that because the potential anomaly in Q arises from collisions, from short distance singularities, it should be local. Then the first correction, which arises at some power A, Planck constant to the power n. The first correction should be integral over the contour of some insertion of some operator k, which is some local operator. This operator should have Gauss number one, and be a one form. So it's of the one form means that k equals k plus d tau plus k minus d tau minus. And Gauss number one means that k is typically linear in lambda. Now by examining, and also, so another thing is that the action on this k of the Peirce operator on k plus lambda 3 over z plus 3 lambda 1 on k should be equal to total derivative of something. Total derivative of some expression lambda. The total derivative is given with respect to d plus j of z. This equation, the existence of such lambda, this equation comes from the nilpotence of the Q operator. Now it turns out that if you look at let's consider this equation. Q of course is again it is Q classical plus corrections of the order h. So it gets deformed by things, by quantum alpha prime corrections. I should say not H, but alpha prime. Things will be equal to 1 over alpha prime corrections. But the leading expression in this equation is, in the leading expression, I can just substitute Q with classical Q. Then this becomes a classical equation on some hypothetical operator K. And by looking at all possible classical operator of Ghost number 1 and 1 forms, so the candidates would be, for example, K equals J2 plus lambda 3, something like this. Some expressions like this would be candidates, but maybe J1 minus lambda 1, some expressions like this. Writing all these possible expressions, it is possible to prove that K would be Q of something, plus D of something else. And D of something else doesn't bother us because it integrates out from the contour. And Q of something we can take care of by modifying to this order of alpha prime, by modifying our definition of the Lux operator. So order by order in perturbation theory, we can change the definition of our transfer matrix so that it remains closed under PRST operator. And note that this calculation by itself is purely classical calculation. This is a usual trick in quantum field theory. The leading order is some condition. You are looking for classical operator, and you see that there are no such operators, and so, or all these operators are already Q or something, so you can correct order by order perturbation theory definition of transfer matrix, it's too close. You can also show that
so K would have both a bosonic and a fermionic bit.
Yeah.
Is that so?
Yes, it has all kinds of. It can also have D plus lambda. Here I wrote both bosonic and fermionic. Also, it could have is proportional to D plus lambda. Also, you can add something like N plus lambda, stuff like that. About six.
Those will be both, fermionic, proportional to fermionic operators.
Yeah, some of them would be in the leading.
Generators,
This in the leading near flat space expansion would be something like d theta right, d minus theta right, commutator lambda 1, anti commutator. And this would be d plus. D plus x commutator lambda c. Some expressions like this. You can write about 8 such expressions for a dozen of possible operators and analyze them. I must admit that I haven't looked at it actually carefully, but there is a proof using slightly different language in Nathan's paper about quantum consistency of conserved charges.
This is stronger breaking of the Bauchy parity symmetry. Because I believe that the difference between those two terms in the action is a total derivative because it's the best Zunino term. It's formally a total derivative.
So this looks like
The J3 plus J1 minus.
No, that's not true.
Plus it's the best Zunino term.
Why is it from good to
It's just Zunino, but it's not total derivative.
You can write as a... you can write as a...
It's a local two-form, but it's not total derivative. It's not a derivative of a one.
It's an induced two-form.
Induced, yes. It's very non-trivial. It's like turning on B-field, non-trivial B-field.
Yes.
H is non-zero. Your Schwarz-3 form is non-zero. So it's essential difference between plus and minus. There are probably some conditions also, because the perturbation theory preserves this symmetry. There must be some relations between.
I mean, the point is that, going back to the H, I mean, we know that we can define the unreacted theory coming from the theory, because instead of having the group UN, it would have SON or SPN or whatever. So H should be quantizing some, for arbitrary H.
What is H?
Yes. I don't know, maybe. And anyway, this would be a terrible breaking on that scene.
I mean, there's a
certain,
what do you mean? What's the symmetry?
The symmetry,
Is Z one or Z?
The whole sheet, like psi plus going to psi minus, combined with some automorphism.
To our best experience with Sakura, everything, all the diagrams are invariant, and if you just replace Z and Z with 1 and replace plus with minus.
But this term is not.
But, this is example. So this is not all. I'm sorry. Yes, there are many. There are about 8 terms. There is a dozen terms that you can write. So you analyze them all. I haven't done it carefully, but I'm in no doubt. Another thing which could be done similarly, and is to prove that. So the thing is Q invariant. From Q invariants on the quantum, there is invariance on the quantum level follows that the thing is independent of the choice of the contour. As I said previously, this follows from the zero curvature conditions follows from equations of motion, but you can also argue that it follows actually from Bierstein invariance. So at least it follows from Bierstein invariance that there are no quantum corrections for the statement. There are no anomalies, because if you consider small variation of the shape of the contour, this would be equivalent to inserting some operator, which is a two-form. So it has now two-form, I mean the engineering dimension 2. Engineering dimension 2 and Gauss number 0. And it should satisfy, because everything is Bierstein invariant, it should satisfy similar equation, maybe namely QL plus lambda over Z plus Z lambda 1, F equals 0. And this equation was analyzed by Valentino Puletti recently. In her paper called Aspects of Quantum Integrability, AGS 5 process 5. And she shown that there are no solutions. There are no classical operators F, which satisfies this equation. There's no total derivative here. It should be exactly zero. So there are no such operators F. Just look at it and verify it. So this shows that there is no dependence on the shape of the contour. Now, there are divergences on the quantum level coming from diagrams and collisions of currents and the exponential. There are certainly linear divergences, but there should not be log divergences. So we verified with Sakura that at one loop level there are no log divergences. And I think from this result of Valentino follows that there are no log divergences at all loops, because if there were log divergences, then this thing could not possibly be independent of the choice of the contour. But I don't have a direct proof of it. Note that potentially what you could have is renormalization of Z. The symmetries by itself do not fix that log divergences could I zero, because Z could get renormalized, the spectral parameter could get renormalized. But it doesn't happen at one loop, and I think from Valentino's, I think from this absence of anomaly should follow that there are no logarithmic divergences.
Are there ever renormalizations of spectral parameters in simpler integrable systems?
Yes, there is typically, yes.
Just like the Lonczyk model?
Well, the best subject is probably the case of WZW, where you have the work of Bacchus and Gabardiel. And in WZW, the spectral parameter does indeed. Well, in WZW, there are left and right. There are holomorphic currents. WZW is simple because there are holomorphic currents. So form something like d plus g minus 1. WCW d minus j plus equals 0. And you can, of course, classically consider p exponential of integral 1 over z integral j plus d tau plus. That would be independent of the choice of the contour classically. Quantum mechanically, however, there would be logarithmic divergences, and the whole thing will flow to z equals 1. And well, at least one point is equals one. At one point is equals one. I think they found also some other points. But in the vicinity of z equals one, it will certainly flow to z equals one. And then it will be just what is called g left. G equals g left and g right. In this model, z does not flow. At least it doesn't. I am sure it doesn't flow. So the thing is finite. Although I don't have complete proof of it.
So, Andre, how much more here do you have?
Oops. Yeah, no, exactly about 15 minutes. Okay.
So, the non specialist should feel free to leave. I think
we're
getting more technical.
Well,
I have a short question, sir. So, in this enumeration of the operator K, also this Collier, when you expand around the last limit, is there the terms which is like a full fermion, like involving ghost and theta, as no derivatives in it? You know, theta, theta, lambda, lambda, like that.
Theta, theta, lambda, well.
When you expand around the flat limit, for example.
Yes, but, well, you have, if you want something, there would be something like theta d plus theta, for example, lambda d tau plus, coming from expansion of, for example, j to plus lambda, if you expand it to theta, yes.
What about no derivative term?
The thing should have engineering dimension 1.
Oh, OK.
But otherwise there could be something. Otherwise, you could insert what you could insert. If you didn't, if at dimension zero, you could have inserted lambda c minus lambda 1, as I already said. You could have inserted in your Wilson line this thing, and this would be Bereste invariant. So lambda 3 over z minus lambda 1 times c. This insertion is Bereste invariant, but it has wrong engineering dimension. So, strictly speaking, lambda, other arguments say the possible lambda could be only of the form. Okay, so yeah, the engineering dimension should be one. This way, we show that at least there are quantum consistently defined non-local conserved charges, which is not quite enough for integrability, probably, but I don't know what is enough, actually. But it's a strong indication. And you could do it, for example, in Green-Schwarz approach, I think, because the kappa symmetry, when you start quantum calculations in the Green-Schwarz approach, you always have to fix kappa symmetry first. But when you fix kappa symmetry, then you don't have any control, you don't have any symmetry after you fixed it. While here, you have order by order in perturbation theory, you have a symmetry, Bereste symmetry, and it fixes all the contour terms as usual. So I now want to give another example when the existence of the symmetry is useful actually for calculating something, not just for proving that something is zero, but to for obtaining the, some formula, non-zero formula. So I want
the algebra of the T's, is that coming or?
Yes, so precisely I want to consider some kind of algebra of the T's. So the algebra of the cases, subtle business, because first of all, if I consider T open-ended, so infinite T's commute, there are many arguments showing that if you take two infinite T's in the infinite line with two values of spectral parameters, they should commute.
Can you find an allocality of the currents? There's no surface term subtleties there.
Well, I said infinite. There are lots of subtleties.
But I mean, right, but infinite is used on that limit from finite.
Formally, they should commute, yeah. But if you take this in line with endpoints, then strictly speaking, it is not a physical quantity. Well, one immediate problem which you can see is that it is not gauge invariant, because as I said, after when I do gauge transformation, gets multiplied by h here, h minus 1 here. It's not a gauge invariant object. But I can try to cure it by inserting, for example, g here, I guess g minus 1 here and g here, something like this. That would make the thing gauge invariant. This is, however, not physical, because Q of this is not zero. Q of this is not zero because Qg equals lambda 3 plus lambda 1g. And Q of the transfer matrix would give you Q of this would give you insertion of lambda 3 over z plus lambda 1 over z. So the deficit would be something like lambda 3 1 over z minus 1 plus lambda 1 z minus 1 inserted somewhere here. It's not a physical quantity. Does my head? Well, it's not clear what to do with it. You can insert, as I said already, you can insert something like lambda 3 minus lambda 1. Lambda 3 over z minus lambda 1. This would make physical quantity. This is one possibility to make this thing physical. It's a little bit not rich enough, I think. We need more possibilities. We need more things. So another subtlety here is that, as I said, even quantum mechanically, this thing does not depend on the choice of the contour. But with the endpoint, there is special divergence associated to the endpoint. And it turns out that with the endpoint, this quantity, the transfer matrix, doesn't depend on tangent direction here, generally speaking, for generic insertion. These diagrams located near the endpoint would create kind of anomalous spin. They could create anomalous dimension associated to endpoint and the anomalous spin also. The anomalous spin would be dependent on the spectral parameter. So the variation would, under the change of the tangent direction, would result into insertion of here some operator, something like some quasi-mean times some rational function of z. So if you try, for example, to define algebra of two transfer matrices, for example, semi-infinite, you will face dependence on the angle here. So it's not very clear to me. This is also related to the problem called non-ultralocality. Non-ultralocality is asymmetry between J plus and J minus, Z-dependent asymmetry. It could be understood either as appearance of anomalous spin at the endpoint, or in the canonical quantization, it can be understood as appearance of non-trivial delta prime terms in the commutator relations of the spatial components of the currents. Delta prime terms is spoil handle, but nevertheless, we can so what should we do here? The only natural thing to do is, first of all, we have to consider the endpoint complex. So we have to consider this in line with endpoint and put various operators here. For example, we can put some polynomials of lambda and lambda trivial. And we will get Bereshit complex and endpoint Bereshit complex. When you take Bereshit variation, the Bereshit variation would be multiplying this by lambda plus lambda trivial. Lambda over z plus lambda trivial. So we have a space of states, which are, for example, polynomials of lambda and lambda trivial, and the Bereshit operator acting on this. So this is some kind of algebraic Bereshit complex here appearing. I could also put, by the way, for example, I could put here the current, for example, J1 plus. Insert J1 plus here. That would also be. And then, so there are various sectors here. Endpoint operators with Bereshit operator acting on them. So one natural thing, at least the simplest thing to consider, would be to take this reason line and approach it with the infinite reason line. Just consider the limit when they are on top of each other and see how approaching from above would differ from approaching from below. So what happens if you, the difference between approach between going from above and difference between going from below would correspond to so classically it's the same. You just in the limit you will just get insertion of P, and here you have some Wilson line with some representation rho, and there you will have tensor product of two representations. Quantum mechanically there will be some additional insertion of some typically C number structure here, like Casimir operators, split Casimirs. And so you have a structure here. You have Bereshit complex, and you have a fusion structure. So something must be. Well, the fusion structure usually consists of two terms. So if you take operator here and use with the infinite Wilson line, then there are diagrams connecting current here with current here. And this is one sort of diagrams. And the other sort of diagrams are diagrams intrinsic to operator O. You take some field inside operator O, which is a composite operator, for example, could contain pure spinner in it. And consider contraction of this pure spinner with, for example, current circulating here. So there are diagrams in the bulk and diagrams in the intrinsic to the operator. And diagrams intrinsic to the operator are usually easy to calculate because it's just lambda, at least at the tree level, it's just contraction of lambda with pure spinner current. It's a very simple diagram, very easy to evaluate. But the bulk operators are usually difficult calculation, surprisingly difficult. You have to consider all possible contractions, and then you have to prove it should be true that this contraction gives you total derivative of some of something that then propagates to the boundary and hits operator O. So the result of internal contractions would actually give you some kind of constant matrix here. Typically something like a split Casimir multiplied by a complicated rational function of the spectral parameter. It turns out that Bereshit symmetry greatly simplifies the calculation of this contraction of matrices, because you can require that let us consider the limit and call it just F of 4, the fusion of 4. It would depend on two spectral parameters, z up and z down. So if we evaluate the BRST operator, it should be the same because BRST is the symmetry of the system. It's a fusion of BRST. And this leads to the equation for the star matrix, which I will write and then explain. It's easy to just write it and then it becomes clear why it appears. So for any operator, let us take all the diagrams which respond to insertion, to contraction of some internal field inside this operator. This is a current on the lower line. And let us call this diagram data of four. Then the rather obvious equation says that 1 over z lambda 3 plus z lambda 1 triddle times data of 4 minus data of 1 over z lambda 3 plus z lambda 1 triddle 1. Where R here is a so-called R matrix, which appears from the currents interacting in the bulk of the Wilson line. So this is, for any O, this is an algebraic equation for R matrix. It's kind of, it has the form like, this should be equal to, this thing should be equal to something appearing from the contraction of pure spinner with this pure spinner, delta of this pure spinner with n. So I'm just something like this form. R plus is some constant matrix which appears, arises from contraction, from diagrams in the bulk of the Wilson line. It's independent of O. It's independent of insertion. So it is, we evaluated it actually with Sakura, we evaluated it explicitly, but also explicit evaluation is rather technically difficult. But this equation turns out, which comes from BRST invariant of this, from this equation of BRST invariance, it allows to easily calculate R plus because R plus is now fixed, but it turns out it's completely fixed by this equation. The structure of BRST symmetry simplifies the calculation of this R matrix. So indeed, this Poisson bracket here is non-ultralocal, so we have the structure similar to what Jean Maillet discussed. This R plus is Maillet-type R matrix. Satisfies some generalized Young-Baxter equation. So this year I want to conclude, and I still don't have answer to my question, how R matrix interacts with BRST symmetry. But so that's what I know about, more or less. About what kind of structures appear. And I want to stress that. So if you consider, if you consider infinitely, so because the Poisson bracket is non-ultra local, the boundary terms are very tricky. So it should be possible to do the following thing. It should be possible to specify a special boundary condition which corresponds to string at the boundary moving at the speed of light, the BMN boundary condition. So we have this BMN vacuum, ZZZ, or PP wave vacuum. And it should be possible to specify a giant magnon type of boundary condition where the endpoints of the string move with the speed of light. And then it should be possible to prove, although I haven't done it, that with these special boundary conditions, if the boundary terms are treated correctly, this fusion algebra should give you the Youngian algebra somehow of PSU 224, which appears in the light cone treatment of the problem. But I haven't done it. But it should be that the Youngian algebra appears if you treat boundary conditions here carefully. So you take the exchange of two infinite Wilson lines and carefully analyze the boundary terms. So in some sense, this Youngian structure should be all in the boundary conditions at infinity.
Okay, well, a lot of questions already, so.